Hi. So, this morning, I'm going to be discussing a little bit more about the writing of the Mishnah. But this morning, I want to do somewhat of a contrast of the writing of the Mishnah with the writing of the Talmud and see a little bit of a difference between the two in both their nature and their agenda. And hopefully get a little bit of an understanding of something which is, on the surface very interesting about of the Mishnah. So we're in the Hakdama, the Rambam. So the Rambam just finished explaining exactly what it was that Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi did. And the Rambam said that he gathered all of the teachings that everyone had had, and we had our whole discussion about that. And so the Rambam describes, after he writes that that he wrote everything down in order that Torah not be forgotten. So now the Rambam asks, "V'lama asa Rabbeinu Kadosh kach, v'lo heinia chadavar kamo shehaya." Why did Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi do that and not leave things the way that they were? Lefi she'ra'a, because he saw, she'hatalmidim mismaatim v'holchim, that the students were lessening, v'atzaros mischadshos, and trouble, there were new troubles that were coming up, uvos u'mamlechas harasha, harasha'a poshetes be'olam miskaberes, and the evil kingdom, the evil rulership of Rome was spreading out in the world and becoming more powerful. The Yisrael misgalgalim v'holchim lekatzavos, and Bnei Yisrael were spreading out and going out to all kinds of distances. So therefore, says the Rambam, chiber chibur echad liyos biyad kulam. So therefore, he put together a single compilation which should be in the hands of everyone in order that they could learn it quickly and not forget it. So the Rambam here, very interesting, asks the question of why did Rebbe do what he did? And he describes this whole problem, all of the problems that were going on that necessitated this this change, this shift in the writing of the Mishnah, and he writes at the end, and therefore he put it all together in order that they could learn it quickly and not forget. The Rambam does not say, and therefore he wrote it because otherwise the Masorah of the Torah Shebaal Peh would have been lost. He says, and therefore he wrote it and put it and had everyone gave everyone the Sefer Mishnah in order that they be able to learn it quickly and to not forget it. So the question itself, first of all, is interesting. The fact that the Rambam has to ask the question, why did Rabbeinu HaKadosh do this? And from the answer that he gives, seemingly you see that at the time of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, it was not the case that there was a threat of the oral tradition being lost entirely. There was not a risk of the oral tradition being forgotten, because then if that were the case, the Rambam seemingly, he wouldn't even need to ask, but certainly the answer to the question would be that why did he do this? Because otherwise there'd be no more Torah Shebaal Peh. So from the fact that the Rambam asks the question, does not answer that, seemingly implies that that wasn't the risk, that wasn't the problem that faced them.
We spent multiple weeks discussing how it was going to be forgotten. People were getting less, weren't doing a lot, they needed more help.
Well, so we're going to talk about that in a moment, that they needed more help. We'll see that there certainly was an issue, there certainly was something which needed to be done. But if you turn the page for a moment, so we discussed before this idea that the Rambam described in here and in other places. The Rambam has this idea of what he calls the Ma'atike HaTorah, those who were the Mekablim of the Torah Shebaal Peh, those who were believed to say about any halacha in the Torah Shebaal Peh, to say, Kach Kibalti, this is the halacha that I received, and they'd be believed, and that'd be the end of the discussion. And as long as you had people like that, as long as you had someone who could say definitively and absolutely, this is what the Masorah says, so you could have a Torah Shebaal Peh. After the writing of the Mishnah, there were still people like that. We have at the before we go. There's I have the little one there in the margin. So I just wanted to point out when the Rambam describes the writing of the Talmud, he does not ask why they wrote the Talmud. He says v'inyan shnei haTalmudim who pirish divrei haMishnah ubir am kuseha v'divrei udvarim shenitzchadshu b'chol beizdin ubeizdin miyemos rabbeinu kadosh v'ad chibur haTalmud. And he says, and and from the Tosefta and from all these other things, that you have the totality of the Masorah, of the Matike, the Matike Hashmua, all the way from Moshe Rabbeinu until the writing of the Talmud. But the Rambam here doesn't ask why they did it. And seemingly, we'll see in a moment, but that because it's once we're talking about the end of the Matikim, the end of the period at which they saw that there was no longer people of the caliber that they could be ma'atike hashmua, that they could keep everything, that they could know everything from the Torah Shebaal Peh, that now the writing down of the Torah Shebaal Peh is no longer to facilitate the learning of the Torah Shebaal Peh, but is to enable the Torah Shebaal Peh to continue to exist. If you look, just to corroborate a few of these points, right? The Rambam writes, if you look, starting from the top, underline point, Miklal ha-chachamim shakiblu me-rava Rav Ashi v-Ravina Umar ben Rav Ashi kibel me-aviv me-Ravina. We discussed the idea that the Rambam, the idea of mekabel, means that they received, not just that to the Rebbe was, but they received a Masorah such that they were able to, according to the Masorah which they received from their Rebbe, were able to say kach halacha, that definitively to testify this is what the Torah Shebaal Peh says. And then skipping down, Ravina Rav Ashi heim sof kach mei Talmud. Ravina and Rav Ashi are the ends of the chum of the Talmud. Over to the next column, Nimtza Ravina v'Rav Ashi v'chavrehem sof gedolei kach mei Yisrael hamaatikim Torah Shebaal Peh. And then he goes to Xer, so he knows that they were the end of the Chachamim, who were of the stature of Ma'atikim Torah Shebaal Peh. They were the last of the Chachamim who were the, so to speak, copyists. They were the last who were able to just mentally copy the Torah Shebaal Peh from the previous generation to take it to the next generation. They were the end of those who could say, who could testify about the entirety of Torah Shebaal Peh, Kach Kibalti, that this is the Masorah that I received, and I know for sure that this is the halacha. So the end of the Talmud is a much different transition in terms of what the point of the writing of the Talmud was, as opposed to the writing of the Mishnah. The writing of the Mishnah, there were difficulties, there were struggles, the learning of Torah Shebaal Peh needed to be facilitated so that it could continue, but there still was a Torah Shebaal Peh, there still were ma'atikim, there still was a Kabbalah which was sustained, as opposed to the end of the Talmud is the end of the ma'atikim. After that, there is no more anyone who is definitively able to say without question about the entirety of the Torah Shebaal Peh that this is the halacha, this is the Masorah. So,
are they saying the capability of the individuals was less? Or is it a question of breadth?
What does breadth mean? Sorry?
A number, just a sheer number.
No, I think it's the capability of the individuals.
Are we saying they're the last Amoras, or is this something different?
Yeah, they're certainly the last Amoraim. I guess the point is what defines them as the last of the Amoraim is they were the last of the people who were of the stature of what an Amora was. An Amora was someone who could say that about all of the Torah Shebaal Peh that Kach Kibalti, that this is the Masorah that I received. So I want to kind of understand from here that a critical difference in what the point of the writing of the Mishnah was and the writing of the Talmud was. The writing of the Mishnah, as the Rambam told us, was in order to facilitate the existence of the Torah Shebaal Peh to continue on. There was all of the struggles that the Rambam mentioned, the government and the spreading out and the all of these issues made it more difficult for them to maintain the same level, and therefore there needed to be some method to prevent, and the Rambam himself says, just to be clear, the Rambam himself in the line before where I started quoting from, says, Kedei shelo tishtakach Torah Shebaal Peh miYisrael, that there was certainly a risk of the Torah Shebaal Peh being forgotten, but what Rabbi Yehuda Anasi accomplished, what he enabled was, through his chibur, continued to be a Torah Shebaal Peh, which was totally Be'al Peh. And we'll explain in a minute what we mean by that, but there continued to be a Mesorah Be'al Peh, which required learning the halacha of the Torah Shebaal Peh from a Rebbe, which continued after Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. As opposed to, at the end of the Talmud, the end of the writing of the Gemara was the point at which the Torah Shebaal Peh is, it still remains, and we'll try and get back to this, it still remains a Torah Shebaal Peh. We'll try and explain why it's different than the Torah Shebichsav, even once it's written down, which we've something we've touched on before, but it still remains a Torah Shebaal Peh. But at the end of the day, the source of the knowledge of that Torah Shebaal Peh at that point is a written document. So try and understand that a little bit more. If you turn the page, this is the Rambam in the Hakdama to Mishnayos, in his Hakdama to Seder's Rhyme, in his introduction to his own commentary to the Mishnah. So the Rambam, after he's gone through very thoroughly explaining what the Mishnah was and the different components of the Mishnah and all of these different things, he explains why he felt it necessary to write a commentary on the Mishnah, and he writes, Umasha heviani lakach mipnesha ra'isi, is because I see hatalmud oseb a Mishnah, the Talmud does with a Mishnah, masha lo yuchal shum adam lahasigo besvar olam, what no one could have ever figured out with their own logic ever. Shehu mevi klalim, it brings certain rules of Omer, and it says of Omer lecha she Mishnah zu nivnesa b'open kach v'kach, this Mishnah was really written in this certain structure. Osha zosa Mishnah chasera b'lashona v'tzrich lios kach, this Mishnah is actually missing a few words and is really supposed to say this. Osha zosa Mishnah leploni v'svar aso kach, or that this Mishnah is actually the opinion of a certain individual and who holds the following, and therefore the Mishnah needs to be understood within the context of that shita that this specific Tana has. V'ochu mosif benuscho mechzar mimenu, it'll add on words, it'll subtract words, and reveal the reasons of the Mishnah in such a way that learning the Mishnah alone you would never come up with. And therefore, says the Rambam, he felt it necessary, if you're going to learn Mishnah, there needs to be a commentary on the Mishnah which can at least sum up for you, you know, what is the Mishnah actually saying? Because when you read the Mishnah, you don't get what the Mishnah is actually saying. And therefore, says the Rambam, I'm writing a commentary which summarizes kind of the understanding of the Mishnah as it comes out from the Gemara, because without that, really, there's no way to come on your own to the conclusions, for the most part, to come on your own to the conclusions that the Gemara ends up with from the Mishnah. One more thing. This is the Rambam, slightly earlier in the Hakdama to Mishnayos. So the Rambam writes that he's explaining why Rebbe wrote the Mishnah the way that he did, and he says the Asa Dvarav Ba Kolomar B'Mishnah Dvarim Kitzarim Hakolim Inyanim Rabim. That Rabbi Yehuda made his, that he did in the Mishnah, what he did in the Mishnah is when he made very short hand, very brief, concise statements, which included a whole lot of information in them. The Haisa Brura Etzlo, and the Mishnah was very clear to Reb Yudah Hanasi himself, Meirov Chido Siflo Verocha Vinaso, due to the sharpness of his intellect, of his mind, and the breadth of his understanding. Aval Misha Lamata Mimenu, but anyone who was beneath him in their level of understanding, Hine he kasha alav. The mission is very difficult to understand. Lefisha chachamim arishonim lo hayu mechabrim ella bishvil atzmam, because the mechabrim harishonim, the chachamim harishonim, the earlier chachamim, they only wrote things for themselves. Now, just to be perfectly clear, the Rambam in Mor Nevochim writes that that's not the natural inclination of a person. The natural inclination of a person is to write things in, when you're giving something over, is to write it in such a way that it's niskabel la'acher, that it's receptive to by the other person. And the natural way of a person, the tendency of a person when they're writing something, is to write it in a way where it has more clarity than the way that it is just, you know, in their thoughts. So when the Rambam here says that the Chachamim Harishonim, that they would write things for themselves, not because that was just, you know, their personal habit, but that's, as we've been discussing, that was specifically, they did it that way on purpose, because the original writing was not meant to be for others. It was meant to be only for the sake of your own understanding, as we discussed at length, that Torah Shebaal Peh was passed over orally, and then you could write it down for yourself, but it was only for yourself. So Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, even though he is writing a chibor, which he is handing over to everyone else, is writing it in the same style, the same format. It's meant to maintain the same tsura, the same general structure of learning which existed up until then. He wrote it in the same way that it was really written, according to his own, as if it was written for himself. The only difference is he's publishing it. The only difference between what he's doing and what the Mechavim who came before him are doing is that he is publicizing and spreading his chibor to everyone else. He's writing it as if it's for himself, and then giving it to everyone else. Aval ein b'kol habraisos, skipping down to the next underlined section, aval ein b'kol habraisos halalu kemetek lashon mishnah. So the Rambam says, in the lines that we're skipping, says there were lots of other compilations which were written as somewhat of a commentary on the Mishnah, to broaden the Mishnah, to add explanations, to add details, whatever it was. But they're not the neatness of language in any of these other chiburim, in any of these other compilations, comparable to the Mishnah. Velo kiseder inyana v'kitzer lashona. There is nothing which was comparable in its brevity. Ulafikach nasis hi ha'ikar kolor Mishnah. And therefore the Mishnah, it is the ikar, remained the primary work. Now the Rambam here says that specifically because of its brevity, the Mishnah therefore remained the primary focus. Now the idea here, the Rambam seems to be saying, is that, you know, people learn Mishnah, like what the Rambam was saying before about that, you know, you read the Mishnah, there's no way you could possibly come up with the Gemara's explanation. But that's on purpose. That's not something that, you know, was just written somewhat sloppily. The Rambam elsewhere describes that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi there was no one like him not just in his own generation, but in nowhere near him in history was there anyone like him with the ability to get to of clarity and of the ability to compile something and organize it the way that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi did. It wasn't for a lack of capability. You know, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi ended up with the job of writing the Mishnah. He just, you know, if only it had ended up with, you know, someone, you know, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was perfectly capable of writing very clearly, and it was specifically and intentionally written in such a way that the Mishnah, you can't just look at a Mishnah and know what the Mishnah means. the Mishnah is intentionally written in such a way that you need the Talmud in order to understand what the Mishnah was. And the Mishnah on its own is not meant to be a standalone, now forget the Masorah Baal Peh, just learn the Mishnah. The Mishnah only works as a facilitator of the learning of the Torah Baal Peh. As the Rambam said, that now they could learn it faster and remember it better, but at the end of the day, anybody who doesn't have a Rebbe, who's not learning the halachos from a Rebbe, is not going to know the halacha. If you turn the page, this is very clear from several places in the Gemara itself. But just look at one of them. The Gemara says, this is Gemara in Sota, Daf Chav Beis, the Gemara says, Tana. There's a Bryce which says, Hatanayim. Now, just to be clear, that we use the word Tanayim often to refer to the Gedolei HaChachamim who are mentioned in the Mishnah, but the word Tana in the Gemara often refers to a teacher of Mishnayos, not to a Chacham who has an opinion in the Mishnah. So when he says Tanayim, the Tanayim, which are people who just learn Mishnayos, or rather who just teach Mishnayos, Mavle Olam. They mix up the world. They cause confusion in the world. Mavle olam salkadaitich. You really? They cause confusion. This is Amar. Yeah, Amar Ravina. Shemorin halacha mitoch mishnasan. Because they teach the halacha based solely on the Mishnah. They know the Mishnah. They teach the Mishnah and then instruct people what to do based on what it says in the Mishnah. Tanya nami hachi. Amar Yeshua v'chi mavle olam hein v'halom yashve olam hein. Shenemar halichos olam lo, right? That what do you mean that the Baalei Mishnah are mixing up the world? They're settling the world. They're making the world a better place because it says halichos olam lo, and we say al tikre halichos ela halachos. So the people are teaching the halacha, which is the Mishnah. They're making the world more workable. Ella shemorin halacha mitoch mishnasan. The problem is that they teach the halacha based off of the Mishnah. And Rashi here explains, have the Rashi bracketed over here. Rashi says, morin halacha mitoch mishnasan, ka amar shemevalin ha'olam, behoraos tos. They mix up the world with mistaken horaos, with mistaken halachic instructions. Dekevan de'ein yodin ta'ameh ha'mishnah. Since they don't know the reasons for the Mishnah, pa'amim gormim shemidamin la davar she'eno dome. Sometimes they draw conclusions which aren't really comparable to what the Mishnah is talking about. Ve'od yesh mishnayis harbe da'amrinin ha'amani plonihi v'yichidahi v'leis hilchazakavasei. There are many times when the Mishnah says, oh, this Mishnah is the opinion of Rabbi Ploni, who is an individual opinion, is a minority opinion, and the halacha doesn't follow him. Va'od she'enan yodim b'machlokas tanayim arishonim halacha k'divrei mi. They don't know when you have a machlokas in the earlier tanayim who the halacha follows. Hilkach morin horos tos, and therefore they teach mistaken halachos. They teach they instruct mistaken in halachic instructions because they don't understand because they don't necessarily understand the Mishnayos that they're teaching. To teach the Mishnah as an independent teaching is valueless. Not only valueless, it's misleading, right? You'll end up, if you just have the Mishnah, the Gemara in Bava Basra says that, the Pasuk says certain people, the Pasuk says certain people are always sad, and the Tov Lev Mishta Tamid, and someone who's Tov Lev is always happy, and the Gemara says that who are the people who are always sad? Those are the Baalei Mishnah. Why are they sad? Because all they have is the Mishnah. They have this thing, it's confusing, it's hard to make sense of it, they don't really know what it means, and therefore just having the Mishnah, it's a half job. It's less than half a job. You just have this kind of half code written instruction manual that you don't really know what to do with. And that was intentionally the way the Mishnah was written, because when the Mishnah was written, the Chachamim were still of the caliber that with help, with the assistance of a written component, you could still maintain a Masorah Baal Peh. The Mishnah was a facilitator of enabling you, the Chacham, to continue a Torah Baal Peh if they had a starting point of something which was written, and therefore the nature of things is that something which is written is easier to learn in such a way that you remember it and you can read it very quickly, you can read it on your own time, and therefore you could learn it much faster. But once you learn it, you're not even half done. Once you've learned the Mishnah, now with the knowledge of the Mishnah, you could go to your Rebbe and learn the Halacha and plug it all back into the Mishnah and now understand the Mishnah. But the whole goal of the Mishnah was only as a step one of the learning process, which is that Rav Weinberg says that's how the learning always worked. Even before there was a written Mishnah, always the way it worked was you learned all of the so to speak, Mishnah, all of the phrasings of the halacha. You learned all of the halachic terminology, and then you learned what it all meant. So what Rebbe Yehuda did was he took that step one and he wrote it down, that initial process of memorization, that they now had in writing, and they could now review it on their own and read it on their own time, and reading something often, if you've combined, you know, the visual element into the learning process, makes it easier to take something in more quickly and to remember it more easily. And therefore there was a facilitation of the process of learning the halacha, but it was totally a Torah Shebaal Peh. Without a Rebbe who taught you the halacha, you didn't know the halacha. You might have the Mishnah, you had no idea what the halacha was. You needed a Rebbe. There was a Torah Shebaal Peh, a Mesorah, which still was the critical focus of understanding the halacha. As opposed to when it came to the Talmud Bavli, at that point, Ravina and Ravasi were the end of the Mekabalim. They were the end of those who were capable of keeping everything in order and organized and understood in a purely oral way. And therefore, the Talmud is written in such a way that you learn the Talmud and you know from it the halacha. If you understand how to learn the Talmud, you, in a very broad way, but to find this, that you are in a large way able to learn the Torah Shebaal Peh without a Rebbe. The source of the information is no longer the Rebbe. The source of the information is the written document, is the Talmud. A Rebbe is his authority in Torah Shebaal Peh, as opposed to up until the writing of the Talmud, even after the Mishnah. The authority of the Rebbe, of the authority of the information came from the Mesorah of the Rebbe himself. Because he said, this is what I learned, that's where the authority came from. After the writing of the Talmud, the authority of a Rebbe comes because he can prove it from the text. The knowledge is now sourced in the text. And that is the nature of the writing of the Talmud, is it turned not just the format of the giving over of Torah Shebaal Peh, that it was now facilitated by a written component, but he actually changed the actual form of Torah Shebaal Peh, that now the information itself is learned from the Ksav, is learned from a written document. Because at the point at which we've come to a point where the only way the Torah Shebaal Peh is going to continue to exist is if the actual halachos are written down, at that point it becomes necessary not just to have something written down to facilitate, but something which actually documents the entirety of the halacha, and the halacha can be reconstructed from the Ksav. And that's why you could have earlier that you could have Rishonim arguing on Gaonim. They don't often do that. Generally, the Rishonim accept the authority of the Gaonim and will say, if this is what the Gaonim said, we'll accept it. But you could have cases where the Rishonim will argue with the Gaonim who came before them. Because the source of the information, if a Gaon says the halacha is like this, and the Rishon says, I have proofs from the Gemara that it's not that way, the source of the information, the source of the halacha, is not the Gaon. It's the Gemara that the Gaon was learning. And if you say, well, I have a different learning of this Gemara, which holds up better, I have kashas on your way of learning the Gemara, whatever the problems are, So then you're going to argue, they're justified in arguing, because the fact that the Gaon said the halacha is this way is not the source of the assumption that the halacha is that way. The halacha is only proven, the authority of the halacha is the words of the Gemara itself.
You're certainly trying to always tell the halacha from the Gemara.
Right. Now,
that was one of the things I enjoyed when I first saw the Steinsaltz, you know, the early Steinsaltz. You know, it was very specific about what the halacha was. You don't get it from the text.
Right. So, and it gets a little bit complicated when we go through the Masorah of Torah of halacha. You know, there is a certainly a very important halachic structure, which is that, you know, the Rishonim are the Rishonim, and we don't argue with the Rishonim, right? We know that you don't say, like, well, Tosos said this, and I disagree with Tosos. We work with what the Rishonim said, right? There certainly is an accepted authority of the Rishonim, but that's really only because we assume they know better than us, and that is why, just like the Rishonim in exceptional cases will argue with the Gaonim, you will find the Achronim arguing with the Rishonim. You'll find the Pnei Yoshua will say, Tosos says this and this and this, but the Rosh says this, and I agree with the Rosh over Tosos, and Tosos is wrong, and I have a kasha on Tosos, and whatever. And in rare exceptions, you'll find that they are, because at the end of the day, we're not accepting their authority because intrinsically, because their Masorah makes it authoritative, but we just have more faith in them than in us. But if the abundance of evidence piles up to demonstrate one way over the other, so then we'll say, I'm sorry that the Rishonim said it this way, but, you know, at the end of the day, the Rishonim are not the source of authority. The source of the authority is the fact that the text says it.
Yeah, each are using the same text.
They're using the same text, but if you can't corroborate your explanation in the text, the fact that you said the pshat, that doesn't really make a difference.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying because the Rishonim are using text, and then the Achronim are using the same text, it's not like you have the Masorah as much when you are a Gaon or you're a Tana. It's not coming through text, it's coming through your actual Rebbe.
You mean before in the time of the Gemara?
Right.
Right, how exactly.
It's different. Because that's why the Gaon, the Amorim or the Tanaim could argue on the Gaonim, because they're going, or rare, but they could, because they're using their own.
You mean either Rishonim would argue on the Gaonim?
No, Rishonim would argue on the Gaonim. I mean right. The Tanaim. Or Amorim.
The Tanaim are the Mishnah, the Amorim are the Gemara.
Right, the Tana, Amor, and Gaon are all coming through Masorah.
Well, no, the Gaonim are already after the writing of the Gemara. So they're already, that's what I'm saying, that the Rishonim will on rare occasion argue on the Gaonim, because the Gaonim are also coming from the text.
Right.
You don't, the Rishonim don't rely on the Gaonim for the understanding of the Talmud. And therefore, they'll say, we trust their authority, they were closer to the, you know, the writing of the Talmud, and therefore, you know, we have a certain amount of faith in their ability to have come to the right conclusion. But at the end of the day, their conclusion is their own conclusion, which they draw from the text, and if I draw a different conclusion, so I might be foolish to, you know, always assume I'm right over, you know, the way the I think Ramosha Feinstein used to say that you could argue with Tosos, you're just a fool if you do, right? That it's foolish to assume that you know better than Tosos. But at the end of the day, there's no rule that you can't argue with Tosos. It's just a silly thing to do, certainly on a consistent basis. But you know, even you have to be rather sure of what you're doing. But the nature of the Masorah of Torah Shebaal Peh shifted at that point to be a Masorah which is now based in the text. However, Torah Shebaal Peh, we pointed this out way back towards the beginning of this learning, that Torah Shebichsav is called Torah Shebichsav before it was written down. The Rambam describes that the Torah Shebichsav was later written down. It was, meaning at the end of the time in Har Sinai. It was called Torah Shebichsav even before Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it down, because by its nature it is Torah Shebichsav, which means that the nature of the knowledge is that all you need to know it is the Ksav. As opposed to the nature of Torah Shebaal Peh, it is by its very nature is a Torah Shebaal Peh. And even once it's written down, And even once it's written down in such a way that the entirety of the knowledge is derived from the text, that remains a Torah Shebaal Peh, because by its nature, by its definition, it is a Torah Shebaal Peh. So what does it mean that it is a Torah Shebaal Peh? Once it's written down and all of the information is in a book, so how is it still called a Torah Shebaal Peh? So there are two ways in which it remains a Torah Shebaal Peh. One of them is that the Torah Shebaal Peh, at the end of the day, you know, if you pick up a Gemara and you don't have the instruction of a Rebbe, and you don't understand the Derech HaLimud, you haven't received a Masorah in how to learn the Gemara. And this is true even in the generation of Art Scroll, that even though they can add in, you know, words into the translation to make the sentences clear, but at the end of the day, if you don't have a Masorah of how to learn the Gemara from a Rebbe, you will not be able to become a Moreh Hora, someone who is instructing the Halacha, someone who is paskening from the Gemara. Can only do so, was only become capable of doing so if you've received the Masorah of how to learn the Gemara from a Rebbe. Someone who picks it up on their own might get all of the information, but they won't really understand, aside from just the complexity of the system of, you know, how do we paskin, who do we paskin, like, what situation, all things, but there's just a frame of mind which requires training in order to approach the Talmud in the way in which it's meant to be approached, which will still require the Masorah of a Rebbe. That's one point. And the other point in which it's still going to remain, that the Torah Shebaal Peh remains a Torah Shebaal Peh, is that at the end of the day, there is something called Hachra. There is something that even after all of the Talmud is written down, at the end of the day, the Talmud does not discuss combustion engines, and it does not discuss liver transplants, and it does not discuss in any explicit way artificial insemination. There's cases that come up where the halacha needs to be applied to cases that have developed. And you know what we do? We go back to the Talmud for those cases. And when it comes to artificial insemination, you want to know who's the father? There's rayas from Hilchos Bechor and from different things like that. But the proofs are going to come from the Gemara. But who told you how to prove it? There's no, that's not written down anywhere. Well, in case this question comes up, this is, by definition, you're not going to have a discussion like that because the question hasn't come up because there is no such thing. So it hasn't been discussed. So the application of Torah, of the halacha, of the Torah Shebaal Peh, even once it's written down, in order to know how to apply it and when to apply it and what applies when, which things take precedence, which arguments hold more weight, what the underlying idea, so you could bring a proof from, if you have two proofs and they're in opposite directions, how are you machria, how do you decide, how do you cut which way it goes, all of these things, that is where the Torah Shebaal Peh certainly still remains a Torah Shebaal Peh, because it's only someone who has a Masorah of how to understand the Torah Shebaal Peh, who has the understanding of the factors of what the Masorah is, of what the Iker is, you have a Tosfos and a Rosh, and you know, which one do you Paskin like? And all of these things is always going to remain in the ongoing, constant application, and in every day, in every generation, application of the Halacha to the situation of that generation, of that time and place, is always going to remain a Torah Shebaal Peh, no matter how written down it becomes. There will always be the process of practical application to a given situation is always going to remain something which cannot be written down by definition. That's the Gemara that says that the Darshan's the Pasuk, that the Torah is Rechava Mineyam, it's wider than the sea, it can't possibly be held, because the infinite permutations of factors that can come into the applying the halacha to any given situation is beyond the ability to write it down. And therefore, that's the nature of, we discussed this, the most basic nature of Torah Shebaal Peh is that it is the explanation of how to apply the halacha L'maisa. And that will always be the defining feature of the Torah She'Ba'al Peh. All right, we'll pause here for today.
What's up with that?